This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Well, good evening, good Hanukkah, ladies and gentlemen. This evening is an important night of Hanukkah. Firstly, it's the seventh night of Hanukkah, and secondly, it's the first night of the month of Tevet, it's Rosh Chodesh Tevet. And thirdly, significantly for myself and my family and many of you, it's the second yahrzeit of my late mother, who was known to many of you and loved by many of you. And a Hanukkah party is a very appropriate way to mark her yahrzeit. She was certainly, in our upbringing, the parent who introduced the sense of fun and kept that sense of balance. Never let my father get too serious, and never let the family get too serious. And when things were getting a little serious, she made quite sure that there was a little bit of partying, or that we got away on a vacation. And so to celebrate her yahrzeit with a party is really very appropriate. So I thank you all for being here, not just for joining the PJC Hanukkah event, but also on a personal note for sharing the Maariv davening with me earlier, those of you who were here, and this evening's event. Now, this is really a Hanukkah party, and you might wonder what we're doing about why I'm standing up here all together, and that is because I'm a little bit worried about parties. I tend to think that a lot of people have parties and don't really know why they're having the parties all together. And what got me thinking on that was when I saw the Pope lighting a menorah, then I thought, this is over, people don't know what they're doing anymore. If the Pope doesn't understand that it's the most ludicrous thing for his cardinals to be lighting a menorah, it's absurd. It's totally, totally absurd. It's all very nice, religions getting together and talking, but there are certain things that are absurd, and people not objecting to it, people celebrating it. Look what's happening. They lit a menorah in the Vatican. Then I realized people don't know anymore what a menorah is for. But we light it. People who don't fast on Yom Kippur light Hanukkah menorahs. That cardinal doesn't fast on Yom Kippur, but he lights a Hanukkah menorah. And lots of Jews also don't fast on Yom Kippur, but they light Hanukkah menorahs. Do they know what it's about? Do you know? Do we know? Why are we doing it? So I figured to have a party without even knowing why we're having a party is, I just find that a bit distasteful. So I thought I would, with your permission, take half an hour of your time to put a couple of questions to you, introduce you to a little bit of background on Hanukkah and what it's all about, and then we can move forward from there. This perplexity about what this is all about is a perplexity that is shared by the Gemara itself. The Talmud itself asks a strange question. You don't find anywhere in the Gemara a question like, my Shabbos, what is Shabbos? You don't find a question like, my Pesach, what is Pesach all about? There's no such question like that. My Sukkot, what is Sukkot? You won't find such a question in all the volumes of the Talmud. But my Hanukkah we find. What is Hanukkah all about? So we see already that there's a sense of disturbance as to what Hanukkah is. What is it all about? It's so countercultural for us to be ostentatious in our religious practice, to do things outside our homes. We never do that. All of our religious practice is internal. We practice inside our homes. The Hanukkah menorah, strictly speaking, has to be lit outside the front door. We don't do that anymore, except in Israel, so we light at windows. But the idea is that the Hanukkah menorah should be visible, it should be able to be seen. We as Jews hate things that are seen. We try and cover them up, we hide them away, we're very quiet people, we're inward people, we don't like anything that is ostentatious. Of course, in recent times, things have changed a little bit, and it's become fashionable for religious people to be ostentatious about their religion. But that's very recent, that's very new, it never used to be like that. It's true, for example, there used to be people always who would wear their tzitzis out. Have you seen people wearing their tzitzis out? Have you seen that? But in the old days, you would never see that they were wearing their tzitzis out, because they always wore a jacket over their tzitzis. Nobody would wear his tzitzit out without a jacket. But today people do wear their tzitzit out without a jacket, so it's all out there, you can see it. But that's very countercultural, that's not the way we normally are. So there's something about Hanukkah that goes against the grain of the Jewish people. And it's for that reason that the question is posed, that the question is asked, my Hanukkah. what is Hanukkah? And that question has perplexed me this year more than any other year. And that is because one of the reasons for Hanukkah is we're publicizing the miracle. There was a miracle, we'll get to that in a moment. And we're publicizing the miracle. We want people to know about the fact that there was a miracle. It's called Pirsume Benissa. Publicizing the miracle. And I took a drive through the streets of Los Angeles the other evening with my family. And I saw Pirsume Benissa. I saw publicizing the miracle. Not the notice. And go past the Jewish house, you look, you see a little light burning in the window, if you like, you sort of see a little light flicker. You go past the non-Jewish houses, do you see lights? Do you see publicity? Do you see a statement? Do you see decoration? And I started having a little bit of a religious crisis. If we're supposed to be the ones publicizing the miracle, not them, we're supposed to be doing that. So should we do that, I thought to myself, should we get all these electric lights out and put them all over our houses and do what they do? Or are we doing the right thing by having a little memorial in our windows? So I looked at the Gemara, and the Gemara says, my Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah? And it then goes on to the story of Hanukkah. It mentions nothing about the victory, it mentions in passing, that there was a battle between the Greeks and the Maccabees. It doesn't really mention the battle. All it says is when the Greeks came into the temple, they defiled the oils there. There was only one little bit of oil left, and it was only enough for one day, and it lived for 8 days. So from then, the following year and forever after, they fixed those 8 days, the Asom Yomim Tovim Baharo V'Hodah. And they made them days of Yom Tov, days of holy days, Lahalo V'Hodah, for praise and for thanksgiving. Those were the two things that they fixed at that particular time, for praise and for thanksgiving. And I'm going to put a few questions to you, and then we're going to discuss the concept of Hanukkah briefly and achieve answers for all of those questions. Number one, the contradistinction between our way of celebrating with our little lights and the Christian celebrations of beautiful demonstrations of light decorations. Secondly, when the Gemara, when the Talmud discusses my Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah, we're given the story of the one little bit of oil that was enough for one day and it lasted 8 days. In the davening, when we say the Shmoneh Esrei, as we did a few minutes ago, and in the Al-Hanisim, we have an entire paragraph about Hanukkah. It mentions nothing about that miracle. It mentions nothing about the miracle of the 8 days. All it talks about there is the battle between the Greeks and the Jews. And there are only a few Jews, and they weren't very well schooled in military affairs. And nevertheless, they won the battle. So what is the real miracle that we're celebrating? Are we celebrating the miracle of the oil, or are we celebrating the miracle of the battle? Second question. The third one is, the Gemara says that these days were fixed for Hallel and for Hoda'ah, for praise and for thanksgiving. What's praise and what is thanksgiving? What is the difference? We say Hallel every morning. Do we know what that means? We say Hallel on Yom Tov. We say Hallel on Rosh Chodesh. What is Hallel and what is Hoda'ah? What is the difference between them? Third question. And the fourth question is the well-known question, if there was enough oil for one night, and it burned for 8 nights, how many nights of miracle were there? 7. So how many days of Hanukkah should there be? 7, not 8. Why have 8 days of Hanukkah when there was enough oil for the one day? The miracle was 7 days, the miracle wasn't 8 days. That's the well-known question of the Beis Yosef and others ask. Let's start off by looking at this term, Hallel and Hoda'ah, and try and understand what the one word means, what the other word means, and what their relationship to Hanukkah is. Hallel means praise. Hoda'ah means thanksgiving, and to understand what thanksgiving means, let's look at the makeup of that word, Hoda'ah, where it comes from, what that word is, and what it means. Can you recognize any other roots in that word of Hoda'ah? Any other words that are familiar to you? Hod, sorry? Vidui? Vidui, confession. Anything else?
Yada.
Yada is with an ayin, no? Anything else? Sorry? Nadim is thanks, it's the same word. Vidui, confession is one. Yehuda. Yehuda. Is one as well. Yehuda's name is there in her da'ah. What does confession got to do with thanksgiving? Can you see any linkage? But thanksgiving means, it is very, very specific. Thanksgiving means, I'm saying thank you to you for something I don't believe I deserve. If I deserve it, I don't say thank you. So I don't thank my boss for paying me after a month of work. That's, I'm entitled, there's a debt, he owes it to me. I don't thank a borrower for repaying his loan at the end of the term of his loan. It's his obligation. Don't thank him for that. I can praise him for that. Praiseworthiness is anything that a person does that is worthy, anything that a person does that is good. You praise him for it. But thanksgiving is very, very specific and very personal. Thanksgiving means, I'm thanking you because I don't believe I'm worthy of what you've just done for me. So in thanks there is confession. In hoda'ah there is vidui. There is a degree of confession, there is a degree of acknowledgement of worthlessness in relationship to the good that one has received in saying thank you. And of course that was the essence of Yehuda, that Yehuda confessed, that Yehuda acknowledged, that Yehuda said vidui. That was the greatness of Yehuda. So hoda'ah is something very specific. Hoda'ah means saying thank you for something that I have experienced, that you have done for me, which I don't believe I deserved. Hallel means praising somebody for doing something great, irrespective of whether I benefited from it or I didn't. Let us now look at those two concepts. We do two things in our davening, in our prayers on Hanukkah. We say hallel, and we say hodah. Where do we say hodah? We say hodah in the Shmona Esrei, in which bracha? Which modim? In the section where we're saying modim. Modim anaklat, we thank you, our Lord. What does we thank you mean? We confess we're not worthy for all the goodness you've done for us. In that section, we say our anisim. Now what is it that we should be thanking God for today, hundreds and hundreds of years after that miracle? Is it proper for us to thank him for the oil miracle? Would that be proper for us to thank him for that? Yeah. Not at all, we got no benefit from that. Today, I personally didn't benefit from the fact that there was enough oil. The people of that time benefited. It makes no difference to us today. That there was 8 days worth of oil instead of the 1 day's worth of oil, it was a wonderful miracle, but it doesn't impact on my life. What does impact on my life is that the Jewish people won the war against the Greeks. That we won the intellectual and physical battle against the Hellenists. That impacts on who I am today. I would not be the same person if that war wasn't won by that small little band of dedicated people who were able to conquer the Greek army. It's ridiculous when you think of it. One little family of Jews, and you know what Jews they were? They weren't Jews that were trained in the Tzahal. They were Jews that came out of Yeshiva. They were Kollel people. They were Jews with long beards and big black hats. So you heard our Maccabee. What do you think he was? He came out of Sports LA there. That's not where he came from. He came from Yeshiva. And he brought a couple of his chavrusas and his rabbeim with him, and fused them together, took on the Greek army. That's what they did. And they won. And for that I thank God. If they didn't win, I wouldn't be here today in this particular form. Do I deserve that? Am I important enough to deserve that God should have done a miracle so and so many hundred years ago that impacts on my life today? No, I'm not. So I say hoda'ah. For that I thank God. So in the hoda'ah, in the thanksgiving, there is no mention of the oil. The oil is not significant. In the hallel, when it comes to praising God, praise is something else. I praise God for miracles. And the miracle of the oil was a very great miracle. Now to explain quite how great the miracle is, let me put it to you this way. There were many miracles in our history and in the history of other religions where small amounts of substance were increased. Eliyahu did it once. You remember when he was pouring also with oil for the poor woman. There was never enough oil, and he kept on pouring. And in the New Testament, there are many stories, and other religions, there are many stories of a small quantity of substance being increased into a large quantity. There is a problem with Hanukkah, and I've got to introduce you to a small halakhic technicality. There was a requirement in the temple that the menorah had to be lit with olive oil. Only with olive oil. That was the whole problem. That's why when that oil was defiled, they couldn't use sunflower seed oil instead. They couldn't use paraffin instead. There was no olive oil, there was no oil. That was it, because you couldn't use anything else. What does olive oil mean? Olive oil means oil manufactured from olives. It does not mean oil manufactured from miracles. So if God comes and magics up some oil, that can't be used for the menorah. That wouldn't be okay. So there's a difficulty altogether with this miracle of God. It's all really nice that he turned a little amount of oil into a large amount of oil, but we can't use that oil. We would have to say to God, sorry, it's not kosher. It's nice of you to try, but we can't use it. Because in your Torah you made it very clear that we can use olive oil only, and this isn't olive oil, this is miracle oil. We've got to use oil manufactured from olives, not oil made by miracles. So how are we able to use that oil leaf that was created? I mentioned it on another occasion last week that oil is a strange thing. Energy altogether is a very strange business, because in the year 1798 already, the prediction was made by Malthus that by the end of that century, or early into the next century, England would not be able to sustain its population. Remember reading that? Because population growth progresses geometrically, and food production growth progresses arithmetically, and he simply drew two graphs and showed the point of intersection, that they wouldn't be able to continue producing sufficient food after a certain time. In 1865, a fellow called Stanley Jevons predicted that the coal reserves of the world only had a few more years to go. In 1914, the U.S. Bureau of Mines predicted that the United States oil reserves were 10 years. That means by 1924 they would be finished. In 1939, and again in 1951, the United States Department of the Interior predicted that U.S. oil reserves had 13 years left. Both in 1939 and in 1951. And in 1972, the Club of Rome produced an important report that shaped a lot of President Carter's period in office, called Limits to Growth, showing that the world oil reserves were measured to be 550 billion barrels, which was equal to 10 years of consumption. And they were right that by the year 1990, we had consumed 550 billion barrels of oil, which the economist points out means that by the year 1990 we should have been in overdraft to the tune of 50 billion barrels of oil. But the world reserves in 1990 were 900 billion barrels of oil. So what goes on with oil? Why is it that we don't run out? Why is it that year after year these brains, these bright people, estimate how much oil it is? It's enough for one day, it lasts 8 days. It's enough for 13 years, it's still going. It's enough for 10 years. After 10 years, we've got twice as much as we had before the 10 years. Doesn't anybody stop over and say, guys, what is going on? Can you not figure out how much oil we've got left? What is it with oil? What is it with the world's energy resources? And I explained that resources are in fact scarce. These figures didn't just come to me by chance. There's an article in last week's Economist magazine that I read very enthusiastically to get to the end of the article to figure out how do I explain it. Doesn't. There's no attempt to. Just leaves it. Goes on to another discussion. And this is the most amazing thing. What's important to understand is that the world's resources are scarce, the world's resources are limited. But the world's resourcefulness is not limited and is not scarce. And Hanukkah is about what you can do with limited resources if you've got limitless resourcefulness. And that's where the two miracles link. You have a small amount of oil. If the resourcefulness is unlimited, that small amount can last a long time. So it isn't that one day of oil expanded and became eight times the amount of quantity. That's not what happened. What happened was there is so much richness in every atom and every molecule of substance. That depending on our resourcefulness, we can draw out varying amounts of energy from the substances we use. So the miracle was not that God turned one bottle of oil into 8 bottles of oil. The miracle was that out of one bottle of oil, olive oil made from olives, we were able to draw 8 days of light. That's human resourcefulness. Not human resourcefulness in the sense that they knew the science of being able to do that. That was a God-given blessing. That was part of the miracle. But man was able to draw 8 days of energy out of one day's worth of fuel. Wasn't an increase in the quantity of fuel. Couldn't have been that, because we wouldn't have been able to use that fuel if it was. And so we've got to go back to the questions we asked, and we've got to say, firstly, the prayer we say, Hallel, Hoda, what are the two? There are two miracles on Hanukkah. There's the miracles of the lights, and there's the miracle of the wall. We say thank you, we give thanksgiving for the miracle of the wall, because that impacts on us. We praise the miracle of the lights, because that was a great miracle. It wasn't a miracle of increasing the amount of material, that's not such a big miracle. To take one and to turn it into two, that a magician can do. But for man to have the resourcefulness to take a limited amount of matter and draw limitless energy from that limited matter, that's what the Hanukkah miracle was, and for that we praise God. That's not what we give thanks for, but thanksgiving is personalized. And it's really important for us to understand that, because that's one of the most important messages of Hanukkah. What we're meant to mean when we say thank you. What do we mean when we say thank you? Most of the time we mean nothing. But what are we meant to mean when we say thank you? Thank you for having me. Thank you for dinner. Thank you for the gift you gave me. What are we really saying? What we should be saying is, I don't deserve what you've just done for me. That's what those words mean, and that's in a sense what we should be saying. And if we don't believe that, if we feel we do deserve it, if we feel we are entitled to it, and if we act and behave as though we're entitled to it and then say thank you, it's meaningless. The thank you should be in the way we conduct ourselves, in the way we express ourselves, in the way we relate to the person who's doing the favor, is doing the kindness for us. What we're meant to be saying whenever we say a thank you, what we're saying is there's a sense of vidu, there's a sense of confession in that. And that is, I want you to know that I don't consider myself worthy of what you've just done for me. That's what thank you is, and that thank you, it's hard to say thank you that way. Because one has to say thank you very often. And saying thank you comes easily. Confession, saying a vidu, doesn't come that easily. We do it once a year, we do it on Yom Kippur. But once we understand that thanksgiving is to a degree confession, thanksgiving becomes a little harder. Let me just have this Thanksgiving celebration. What does it mean? It's back to my theme that I started with. People celebrate without understanding what they're celebrating. Thanksgiving should mean, if there's a sense of thanksgiving, is thanking God for a goodness we don't believe we deserve. It introduces modesty, it introduces humility. And thanksgiving in an interpersonal sense is exactly the same. Constantly saying thank you for things we don't believe we deserve. We're into societies at the moment to publicizing and seeking the justification for all the goodness we've got. We're into rights. A society that is into rights cannot be into thanksgiving. Only a society that is into obligation can be into thanksgiving. I'm obligated to give thanks because I am not entitled, I do not have a right to the goodness I'm getting. I do not have the right to the blessing I'm getting. I was asked, in fact, this week by somebody who couldn't be here because he wasn't well, unfortunately, why we thank God when we get better. He made us sick in the first place. It's sad that the person who asked the question got sick after he asked the question. I feel very, very concerned and upset about him, wishing him a fresh name. But he asked the question, I said I would answer you tonight. He said, why do you thank God for making us better? He made us sick. Very good. He makes us sick, but then he makes us better. We say thank you. Depends on our attitude. If our attitude is we're entitled to be healthy, then we should get angry when he makes us sick, and when he makes us better, we should say about time. That would be the right approach. If we don't believe we're entitled to good health, we're not really deserving of good health. then every day we have good health, we should be saying to God, I don't know what I did to deserve this. I don't know what I've done to deserve this. When we get ill, we should say, Ah, God, now you're treating me like I deserve to be treated. Now, and this is it. This is normal life. Please, make me better. Make me better, not because I deserve it, but so that I can serve you better. It's something that constantly, you know, an airplane crashes. And what do we say? Why? Why did it happen? I remember sitting in an airplane. It was an LL flight. I think I was the only religious person in it. And the people around me pulled out, you know, LL hymns out, these tefillah sadeh, these prayers for travel. And the people around me were some school kids. They were mocking it. They thought this was very funny. And this plane hit such turbulence, you can't imagine. It hit the most terrible turbulence. These school kids pulled out the tefillah sadeh, and they start davening. And next to me, there was sitting a man, an Israeli guy, who was not saying tefillah sadeh, he wasn't praying. He had a slide rule out in those days, they didn't have calculators, and he was writing, the plane was bumping around, he was working with his slide rule, and after about 10 minutes of this, I was feeling sick already. He threw his pad of paper and his slide rule down in the empty seat between the two of us, and he said, I can't work out what's keeping this thing in the air. And I said, what is your profession? He said, I'm an aeronautical engineer. And that really should be the approach. The approach shouldn't be when a plane crashes to say, why did it crash? We should look at every plane that flies over and say, my goodness, look at that. Why does it stay up there? Why does God guide these ships through the skies and bring them down safely time after time after time again? Why does it happen? What have we done to deserve this? The economy is going right. Nobody's saying, what have we done to deserve this? They're saying, about time. We've had some rough years, finally we're getting rid of the deficit. About time! As if this is something that we're entitled to. Not entitled to it. What gives us that right? Are we all that good? Are we all working that well and that hard? Are we all that dedicated to God and to goodness that should be the result? There's that sense of entitlement. If we believe we're entitled to good, we only question God when there's tragedy. If we believe we're not entitled to good, we should question God when there's good. And that's thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is questioning the good and accepting the tragedy. Saying when tragedy happens, that's normal. That's life. When good things happen, that's miracle. And the ability to notice miracle and thank for miracle and celebrate miracle every day of our lives, that's thanksgiving. That's what Hanukkah is. But what miracle? Not the miracle of unlimited resources. Not the miracle of a million little lights outside your house plugged into an electrical socket that gets powered by some power station. That's not the miracle of Hanukkah. The miracle of Hanukkah is to take a little bit of oil in your house, and a bit of cotton wool, and to roll the cotton wool, and to pour the oil, or even make the oil in the day that we used to do that, and to create little lights ourselves out of a little bit of raw material, cheap raw material, it's not connected to any electricity, to make it ourselves, to make one light the first night, a second night the next light the second night, a third light, fifth light, and that the number of menorahs indicates the number of people in the house. So what happens when you walk past, or you drive past, we went to look at a house, I'm sure everybody's seen it. Oh, confusion, Megan David and Santa Claus, is, oh, we've seen the house there, Sunset Boulevard. What is it? You see this empty house, dark, not a sign of life. Lights all over the place. You walk past a Jewish house, there's light inside the house. There are people walking around. There are people interacting. You're looking into the house to see the lights. That's where there's little lights. You've got to look hard to see them. They're not ostentatious. That's the way we do it. That's Pursuma Dimisa. Our concept of publicizing the miracle doesn't mean throwing it in people's faces. It means putting it there that if you seek it, you'll find it. If you look for it, you'll see it. We won't hide it away from you. But we're not going to throw it at you either. Because we are celebrating limited resources. We are celebrating little bits of oil. With human resourcefulness, turning that into pure light. And the laws, there are pages and pages written in the Gemara and in the Shulchan Aruch about the purity of the light, both the Shabbos lights and the Hanukkah lights. How pure they've got to be, what oils can and cannot be used, what wicks can and cannot be used, because certain wicks and certain oils give us bad smells and give us bad fumes and give us unclear lights and cloudy lights. the purity and the beauty of each light is what we celebrate, that the human being has the capacity to create that beauty and to create that energy out of those limited resources. That's what Hanukkah is about. Is that what we share with Western civilization? No. Western civilization have wonderful things to celebrate. They celebrate abundance of resources, they celebrate all sorts of things Western civilization has to celebrate. And of course they must celebrate it, that's beautiful. And we must celebrate our celebration. But when we start with Christmas trees and they start with menorahs, then we don't know what we're doing anymore. But we're celebrating with something uniquely Jewish, something we've given our lives for, something we sacrificed for. We fought against a victory determined by abundance of resource, for a victory determined by an abundance of resourcefulness and limited resources. That has been the fight between us and the Hellenists, us and the Romans, us and Esau, us and Amalek, us and the Western world. That has been the battle that's gone on all the time. Our small and limited resources with a limitless resourcefulness. That has been the essence of what the Jewish people is. And when we know and we understand, when we understand that that's what it is that we're doing, the whole lighting of the menorah takes on a different meaning. The whole celebration of Hanukkah, of why it's 8 days, takes on a different meaning. The inner warmth and the inner glow of what Hanukkah is, the understanding that Hanukkah is a time of Hallel V'Hodaya. We say praise for the things that are great, that are beyond us. We say praise for things that we get no direct benefit from, but they're great, they're awesome. But more important, we don't satisfy ourselves with that. We say Hodaya. We turn that into a personalized experience of recognizing the miracle in the ordinary good and the normality in tragedy. So that when a time like Hanukkah comes, we're able to see in these miracles, we're able to see in these day-to-day events, that which is miraculous, that which is undeserved, and to say Hodaya, to say, I don't deserve this God. I don't deserve any of this. And for this I thank you. That's the modesty of the Jewish people. That's the tzniut of the Jewish people and their anava, their humility, that which sets them apart, that which allows them to engage in an exercise of persona denisa, of exalting and publicizing a miracle in a most modest and delicate way, that which typifies the Jewish way. So I wish you all a very good Hanukkah. We'll have an opportunity.